It's Jeremy White and Joe DiBiase.
Dog food out of the cup? That thing is so sacred that no one can lay a finger on it if we haven't won it. But the moment we win it, we're just going to throw it in the ocean and we're going to eat out of it and we're going to do whatever.
Listen, there's an obvious full circle moment here. When you were a kid and you were going to get sick, like you might throw up, did your family use the same bowl as the family movie popcorn bowl?
Should it be your popcorn bowl?
Oh, wow.
You have it for the day. My son got sick. Sorry. It's a popcorn bowl now.
If the Sabres ever win the Stanley Cup, they bring it in here and you've got to eat popcorn out of it. And then after the popcorn's gone, someone has to throw up in it.
You could even flip the order there, and as long as, again, it gets washed, it's fine.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on Western New York Sports Giant, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Me and Sal are already doing the show in here right now. We're just talking Seahawks before the show gets rolling here. I mean, last night there wasn't, you know, a lot of times we'll come and we'll open up with what happened last night. What happened last night? Was it kind of it was an off night for me. There are a lot of sports, like for sports, you know, World Series.
Right, right, right.
I've been watching the baseball playoffs maybe as much as I have been since a long time. Well, four. I don't even know. There was no college football last night, right?
There was a game, and I guess it was a pretty good game, but it wasn't like high-profile game.
Okay, wait, no, sorry. There was a game last night.
It was like Lafayette. Did like Louisiana Lafayette or someone like that play?
No, you know what the game was last night?
It was Kennesaw State against Liberty.
That's what it was. Liberty has been the team people think could get in the playoff with like as the that like group of five team, and they lost to a team that hadn't won yet.
Oh, yeah, they lost. Kennesaw State was 0-6?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I wasn't watching Kennesaw State and Liberty last night. Felt like a good night, like... Every night has been something's going on. Let me take an off night.
All right, so actually, this is a great question to ask you because you, I'm going to guess you will know the answer to this question. I don't know, though, for sure.
Okay.
Last night, we had an event, Real Men Wear Pink.
Yep.
I was there. Jeremy showed up. Bulldog, we missed you. You should have come by. It was great. We're at Sports City Pizza Pub, and they have TVs everywhere. We're watching the sports.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, there's no big games going on. I mean, there's one hockey game last night, right?
Right. So right, everyone was playing on Tuesday.
Right.
Yeah.
But I kept seeing, and I looked at Jeremy, I'm like, what is this stuff I keep reading about Joel Embiid? What is going on with Joel Embiid?
So
like,
the NBA
what is the investigation about him not being there? I'm so out of the loop on this.
Yeah. So NBA season got fired up last two nights. Yeah, there's a probe. I think they're calling it a probe into Joel Embiid. And it's because he didn't play in the opener. And this has been a thing about him, right? Load management, right?
Right.
Load management, not playing all the time, taking off nights on national televised games. I'm a Denver Nuggets fan. And last year when the MVP race was really hot between him and Jokic, it was Sixers and Nuggets who were getting ready to play on like a prime time game, and then like 3 hours before the game, Embiid doesn't feel like playing. He's gonna take the night off, rest for the playoffs. Like you have this big MVP bowl, and one guy's just like, I'm just not gonna show up. So this has been a question for him for years, and I'm trying to get the exact details, but the way I heard it yesterday, I was listening to a podcast talking about this, is he basically made it known that he's going to be taking off certain games, like, all the way through the stretch of the season. Like, he told people, like, there's going to be games in March during the week, like, I'm just not going to play. And I guess there is an NBA policy against star players who they call, they actually have a baseline. Like, if you're an all-pro player or you're whatever, and you're taking nights off without any injury, like, you're not allowed to do that.
Right.
And he's already saying, like I guess he already made it known, like, I'm going to be doing that all year long. So I guess that's it. It's about him deciding to take nights off, I guess, is the whole
thing. So what's the probe and investigation? I mean, obviously, this is just kind of seems like it's pretty straightforward.
I guess maybe now is he hurt right now? Because they're saying, oh, here we go. Joel Embiid, who's like one of the best players in the world. Left knee management is what the Sixers are saying. He missed the season opener. And maybe that's it. I think that's it. The league is looking into, is his knee really hurt or he just not feel like playing in the opener?
Or
manage how many games he plays. I don't know.
Even if you're load managing, It's the opener. Why are you not playing?
Right. In the first place, it seems ridiculous.
It's the opener.
Yeah. Okay, the report doesn't note what rules the 76ers may have violated. So I guess it is kind of in question, the whole thing. It's just... That is my least favorite part of the NBA. Absolutely. Not knowing... Me and my brother wanted to go see LeBron play last year in Toronto. Like, we've never seen LeBron play live. We want to go see LeBron play live. And it was like a Wednesday night game, Lakers at Raptors, in April. And I remember the whole week leading up, like, are we going to go to this? He's just going to not play, right? They're about to be in the playoffs. We're going to buy tickets that are priced as though he's playing. And then we're going to find out, 3 hours before, like, hey, LeBron's not playing. We're going to be halfway there. We're going to be already there in Toronto. And we're just going to find – that's my least favorite part of the league. You just don't know when stars are going to play.
Wasn't he really good in the Olympics, or wasn't he like a key member
LeBron?
Of what they need? No, Embiid.
Embiid?
What they needed. Like, didn't something, like, people said, like, hey, they really needed what he offered.
He wasn't as good as they thought he was going to be.
Is that what it was?
But he was still, he played a big role in one of their games.
Maybe that's what it was.
Maybe the semifinal game. One of their last games, he was a huge contributor, but he got benched actually early.
Okay.
Like, there was a game.
There was a game where it's like, hey, they really needed Embiid. So I keep thinking, all right, well, whatever. He's got the gold medal, and he really helped everybody win. So maybe we can just... People are like, ah, whatever. Cool.
Yeah, I'm not an Embiid guy. Maybe it's Philadelphia, too, in general. And it's this load management stuff. And even it's the Olympics a little bit. You know? The international sports stuff is always, like, this is a question, right? Who should be allowed to play for who? He was born... I forget which country he was born in. But he was born in an African country. And then... He played for France, I guess, but then somehow was allowed to switch. So he just decided before these Olympics, is why he got booed in Paris, he decided to switch from playing for Team France to playing for Team USA. I don't know. A little bit of a band jump on the bandwagon type move. So he is not my favorite player.
He was born in Cameroon.
Cameroon. Thank you. Anyways, NBA season's rolling. You're a Lakers guy.
I'm a Lakers guy. I mean, I don't get dialed into him every night, but I root for them.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, it was a little bit more like that. Like, yeah, and then I just kind of lost touch, and then they won, and Kobe. I love Kobe so much, but I was a Showtime Lakers guy growing up. Magic and Kareem and James Worthy, and then Kobe came. It was great, and Shaq. They were bad for a while, and yeah, I mean, I like the LeBron thing. It's so funny. I don't know what you guys said about this yesterday. Like, did you talk about LeBron and Bronny?
Briefly.
So I have no idea where you fall. I will tell you where I fall. And maybe it's just because I like LeBron and the Lakers, but
yeah,
you're not hurting anybody. Who cares? I think it's cool, man. It's a great story.
Mm-hmm.
So what? Actually, when it happened, the next morning, I showed the video to my son, who's 10, and I said, you know what? Can't wait till you're 18 and we can play flag football together. It was kind of funny. Like, it's an awesome moment. Who cares? What are they hurting?
Right. We'll get to football, by the way. Bills and Seahawks. I want to talk to some Seahawks because we haven't even mentioned them a lot all week, and they've got injury stuff too.
And yes, by the way, everybody who says, oh, it's so manufactured, of course, like,
yeah.
They put them in at the same time on purpose. That part of it was manufactured for the effect, but they were also up by 15, and yes, that's how you want to do it. That right there is when, like, Jeremy was mad that Eichel and McDavid didn't take the opening face-off against each other. That should have been manufactured to make that happen.
Right. The difference here, and where I land on it, is I don't... LeBron, do your thing. Lakers, do your thing. Bronny, do your thing. Like, it's a for if it's a cool moment for them, and of course it is, then, like, all the power to you. I have no problem with it at all. Other than... I don't have a big problem with it. I think the one lane that I see people take that I think is right is it's fake, more fake... Maybe than some of those other circumstances. The Griffies were in attendance, right? At this game.
Were they there?
I think they were there.
I didn't know that.
And they played together, right?
They had home runs in the same game.
Home runs in the same game.
I think they went
game.
Back to back, I believe, actually. Which is unbelievable.
You tell me. I know Ken Griffey Jr. had earned it. Was his dad still playing because he was still pretty good, or was his dad still playing because they just wanted to make it so that they were going to play together?
It's a good question. He was okay. He was a great player. So, I mean, like, he wasn't LeBron. You know what I mean? Like, Ken Griffey Sr. wasn't what LeBron is.
I was going to compare
him the other way.
I was going to compare him the other way around.
There's no doubt Bronny, that I get it. Like, well, he shouldn't even be in the league. That's, I get that part of it.
That's the part people, I think, have a problem with. Yeah.
But once he's on the team, and we all know how this went down. Come on. Like, I'm not naive. Yeah. LeBron's like, you want me to stay in L.A.? You got to draft my son. I want to play with my son. Okay. He's LeBron freaking James. He's done more for the sport than almost anybody. So what? Like, I think it's a cool moment.
By the way, Ken Griffey Sr. Hit a 280 in his 41-year-old season.
Really, really good, man.
So I think actually he... 282, yeah.
I love that. It's great.
So I think actually he was still good. Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. Nepotism, whatever, happens everywhere, right? It happens in the NBA, happens in every sport. To me, the most interesting part about it is how much... It is proof of how much power LeBron still yields.
100%.
At 40 years old, or about to be 40 years old. He's still that good. He's still that important and critical to the biggest brand in the sport that he can just... swing his power hammer and like, I want my son to play for the team. And Lakers are, okay, LeBron. Yes. Yeah, of course. We will do that for you. Like, and I'm not even saying they were wrong in doing it. Like, I think they should do a lot of what he wants to do. And if he wanted this to happen, then I think you do it. Because like you said, you're the one person you are hurting, I guess, is the 15th man on the bench that's not getting an NBA.
The guy that we don't know, right?
Right, exactly. That person is out there. I don't know who it is, though. So, NBA season is underway. The Knicks are supposed to be good, too, I guess.
And they got crushed the other night by the Celtics, who hit 29 three-pointers.
Yeah.
29 in a game. They just tied the NBA record.
They just chuck three-pointers. All right, so NBA season is underway. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy is off this morning. Sal's in, of course. And we've got Bills and Seahawks this week. So, the thing we were talking about a little bit before the show started was about Seattle and Metcalf, right? Like, yesterday we got all these injury updates, and before we even get to Seattle, is there anything I should be... Who should we be most worried about for the Bills this Sunday? Bernard missed yesterday, but it was part reason due to a personal reason.
That's the one you still got to worry about. I mean, he's so critical.
Right.
We don't know. What we don't know is how much he would have done had he not been excused for personal reasons.
Right. That's
Sean McDermott said he's day-to-day with the ankle. He's still dealing with that. He's excused for personal reasons.
Yeah.
He may not have practiced. We don't know. He is on the injury report as a DNP, listed both for personal reasons and the ankle. And the pec, by the way, because he's still getting treatment. He's dealing with that. But really, the ankle in this case. So today will be a big day to see if he's out there and practicing. But
yeah,
the fact that Sean called him day-to-day is a really encouraging sign to me.
Yeah, I saw someone point out on Twitter, like, that's usually the lowest level of injury on like McDermott's scale a little
bit
day to day. So, all right, good. Because
there have been guys day to day that did not play that week.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. It's not probable, right? Probable used to be everyone would play every time they were listed as probable in the NFL.
Yes, that's why they got rid of it.
Yeah, that's why they got rid of it. So it's not quite that. Mm-hmm. Metcalf on the other side, though. Like, don't you think he's just not going? He's not going to go. Or if he does, it's just...
Yeah.
Like, am I right here on Thursday? We are still 4 days before the game, or 3 days before the game. And I'm just... I feel like I want to not be worried about DK Metcalf in this matchup.
I tend to lean that way as well. At this point, I can't see him playing, except the fact that they keep saying that he's very likely to maybe play. Like, not even that way. Like,
but he wants to try to play,
right? He's going
to
try to play. And everybody says, let's remember, this is a freak, and he's on the injury report a lot, and he always fights through injuries. You can't keep him on the field. All that is true. All that is absolutely true, Joe. Everybody I talk to in Seattle, these media people and following their reports, they keep saying, yeah, that's DK, though. He's different. Like, he'll not practice for the whole week, and then he'll play because that's what he does. But we've already been told... A, he didn't practice yesterday, and that he won't practice today. They've already said that.
Yeah.
He's not practicing Wednesday or Thursday. But it's possible, from everybody I'm reading, he could be out there on a limited basis on Friday and then give it a go on Sunday because that's what he does. I agree with you, though. Even if that's the case, what are they getting out of him?
Yeah. I'm feeling like this is a decoy situation with DK Metcalf.
That you mean like playing games throughout the week on the injury report?
Not even that.
Or decoy on Sunday?
Decoy on Sunday. That he dresses, and you might even see him out there on the field, so the Bills have to... Well, how would the Bills approach this? Because I hear that from coaches, and teams have done that before. Like, There was a game last year, I think this happened actually to DeAndre Hopkins, who got traded yesterday, where I remember starting DeAndre Hopkins in a game, and he played but didn't get a single target. And then at the end of the game, I think even the coach admitted, maybe Vrabel admitted, that, yeah, we were out there so that the opponent had to commit the attention to him. And I guess they could do that, but would the Bills just automatically say, okay, Metcalf is out there, we have to pay attention to him the same way we would otherwise? Maybe they would, and maybe they wouldn't. I don't know how that would work.
I don't think so until maybe he shows that he can do it.
Yeah.
Improves he can beat
you. Or maybe
you
could do it at the start and figure, like, maybe Rasul Douglas after a drive could come over to Bobby Babb or call up to Bobby Babb and be like, hey, he doesn't have it.
Yeah,
like,
that, I mean, yeah. Yeah,
like,
right.
Like, after a drive, whoever's out there in the field can, like, get a sense of, guys, he's not the same player right now.
Absolutely plausible. And you have coaches upstairs too looking for that. Like, okay, like, we're watching what they're doing here.
Right.
He's not moving the same. He's not running the same routes.
Is he getting open?
After a series or two, he's run a couple 20-yard hitches or whatever, come back to the ball, but he can't do that. I mean, this is a big man. He's got an MCL sprain. I think it's a strain, not a sprain. Which isn't as severe, and the other part about this is, just like the Bills next week, by the way, they have a division game the next week. So I keep thinking, and they're in a tight division race they play the Rams next week.
Yeah.
Well, let's just say, especially if the Rams win tonight, the Rams are getting a whole, week plus
3 extra days,
and the Seahawks may look and go, look, we need DK for that division game. This is a non-conference game coming up with the Bills. We just have to be smart about this. I could see them thinking that way. That might be the smart way to think, but I don't rule him out playing, because they certainly aren't doing that yet.
Not only are, Sal, there is their next game in the division. You mentioned like the whole division race is pretty tight right now. They go Rams, Niners, Cardinals, Jets, Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the Seattle Seahawks, don't you play the long game here a little bit?
You have 4 out of 5 division games coming up, and you've got a tight division race. So I could see that. I think that's a good point of what's coming up on their schedule, that they want him as healthy as possible for that game. And it's not a shame, because it certainly is beneficial to the Bills that Metcalf would not play. If there are Bills fans that don't get to watch the Seahawks a lot, and maybe remember Metcalf from, like, remember the pre-draft process with Metcalf?
The pictures,
right? Yeah. And then the combine for him was like, did he have one of the most interesting combines ever? Because he looked like a freak. He ran like an insane 40 time, and then remember the three cone drill that he ran like as slow as anybody has ever run? Spencer Brown ran a faster 3-cone drill than DK Metcalf. I always love that fact. That happened. He's turned into, like, he went late second round, and there were a bunch of receivers that went ahead of him. Andy Isabella was one of the receivers that went above him. And he has turned into, like, one of the most fun receivers in the league to watch. I don't think he's, like, the best receiver in the league. I wouldn't even put him maybe in tier one, or maybe he'd be, like, in that tier two group. But he is so fun to watch. But, again, I think it's a good thing for the Bills. I wonder what kind of game he would have, though, even if he were good to go. And maybe that will still happen. Because the Bills are so good at not allowing those big plays over the top. One reason we're going to remember that Nico Collins play for years. We remember that Jalen Waddle play a few years ago in Miami, because there are so few of them. And those are the plays Metcalf thrives on. So I wonder, and maybe, again, he will still play, and maybe he'll be healthy enough, but usually the Bills are good at smothering a receiver like this in the first place. Like, they usually don't have to worry about it. They're usually good at not letting a DK Metcalf beat them.
Right. So what you have to think about here in this case, I'm going to give you a couple of stats here. Because in this case now, you're talking about, okay, let's just say he doesn't play, or he's completely ineffective, and you know that you just don't kind of have to worry about him, all right?
Yeah.
Well, then you need to get to Tyler Lockett and Jaxon Smith-Njigba, right? Plus, Kenneth Walker can catch the ball out of the backfield, no doubt about it.
He's good out of the backfield,
right? It is amazing to me. Do you know who the leader in passing yards in the NFL is?
Is it Geno?
Geno Smith.
I was going to say, I knew he was
it's
a couple
Geno
weeks ago.
Smith. Yeah. But yet, I keep getting told how awful their offensive line is by people in Seattle.
Yeah.
They have a really bad offensive line, according to everybody in Seattle.
Yeah.
But yet their quarterback is leading the league in passing yards. So I'm doing some digging. All right, why is this? How is this happening?
Mm-hmm.
And this is true. His time to throw is 12th worst in the league. That's not terrible, but he's
like
got
12th slowest?
He has the 12th least time to throw.
Okay.
He's got to get rid of the ball.
Yeah.
Okay? He's been sacked the third most in the NFL.
Okay.
But yet he's still leading the league in yards. You know why?
Because is he throwing the ball like 50 times a game?
It's because these guys get separation early.
Yeah,
Jackson Smith and Jigba and Tyler Lockett. They're getting separation early. And without, to me, this is the biggest issue. This is the biggest reason why if DK doesn't play, now you can creep up on those guys. Now you can say, hey, Lockett can go deep. We know Lockett can be a deep threat sometimes. But how much are they threatening with a guy like DK down the field? We can kind of come up and make sure that they don't do what Geno's been great at doing this year, actually, which is, I don't have time to throw. I'm getting rid of the ball as quickly as possible, and I got a couple guys that can get separation, and I can get it to them.
Right. No, that's right. And they do have other guys that are able to do that. The tight end's not bad either, Noah Fant. He's more of like the vertical, up the seam type of tight end. But, yeah, Lockett and Smith and Jigba are going to be still a good 1-2 duo that the Bills will have to stop on Sunday, even if Metcalf, you know, can't go. We'll talk more about Seattle. They made a trade yesterday, too.
Yeah, very interesting.
So what happened here? They swapped a starter for a starter?
Yeah, so they... Is it Jerome Baker, right? Is there
Jerome Baker, yeah.
Jerome Baker is their... Was their starting middle linebacker. They traded him to the Tennessee Titans for Ernest Jones... Obviously, he was their starting will linebacker. He was their starting weak side linebacker.
Yeah.
They traded him to the Tennessee Titans for Ernest Jones IV, who just played against the Bills this week.
Right.
He's now going to go to Seattle. They're going to make him the middle linebacker and move Tyrell Dodson to the weak side. So they're actually changing both their linebackers mid-season here, mid-game, mid-week, I should say, before they play the Bills. And the word is, Joe, they're doing it this week. Like, he's going to start.
He's going to start.
He's going to start a middle linebacker. Although Tyrell Dotson's still going to call the plays and wear the green dot from the will spot. And the reason is because the system translates, because in Tennessee, their defensive coordinator worked with Mike McDonald in Baltimore. So the system's the same. So it's not like he has to get totally onboarded to a new system. But he's coming into a new team midweek at middle linebacker.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about Amari Cooper and how many plays, and this is a guy that's going to probably be on the field all
he's
the time.
Just on the, I mean, wouldn't the Bills think to attack that?
I would think so. And the other thing I'm thinking is, I mean, Tyrell Dotson, if you remember last year,
yeah,
he had some really good PFF grades, but the coverage numbers...
I'm looking right now. It's, yeah, I mean, everything's gone down. His run defense grades last year were the thing that put him, like, he had like a top 10 PFF grade among linebackers.
But coverage, he's never been known as a big cover guy, right?
Yeah, although I guess they liked him in coverage too last year.
Okay.
But run defense, here's the big drop. He last year playing a different position, right? He played weak side for the Bills, and this year he's been in the middle for Seattle.
Yep.
Last year he, at PFF, had an 82.6 on run defense out of 100.
Okay.
And this year in Seattle, he's got a 54.
Mm-hmm.
Huge drop. And maybe Seattle's thinking that's just happening because he's playing the wrong spot.
That's very possible. I would tell you, though, just from him being in Buffalo over the last several years, if you're going to put him at will, the weak side, that's the spot where you got to cover backs out of the backfield and tight ends a little bit more. And Tyrell's a good athlete, but I wonder if that's where the Bills say, let's go test him there.
803-0550 is the phone number on the Bills and Seahawks. I want to ask Sal about the Myles Garrett trade idea that Jeremy brought up yesterday, because there's more. He's going to be the
guy.
Why are you
going to tease me?
Everyone's writing about it. Garrett is maybe a trade idea. There's actually a larger question I want to ask about the Garrett trade idea and kind of teams in the league right now that are maybe looking to blow it up. There might be a couple. So we'll get to that. We got Joe Yurden coming up at 8 a.m. We'll talk some Sabres this morning. And then, of course, we got our Thursday night three-leg parlay in a little bit later on. So busy show. There's time for your phone calls, though. We got a couple of open segments before 8 o'clock. 803-0550 is the phone number. It's Jeremy and Joe. Sal's in for Jeremy this morning, and this is WGR.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ton of respect for his game and the way he's developed over the years and the staying power that he's shown. It's very impressive. Again, being out there the last few years, we haven't played them naturally yet or over the last couple of years, but very impressed by his level of play, by the way he has command of their offense, and you know, they do a lot of what I would say is high-level stuff on offense.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott on Geno Smith and the Seahawks. Thursday morning, it's going to be chillier out today, like low 50s as the high, some clouds. It's been 70s, I mean, at times this week, so just a little bit cooler today. I'm still gonna get out on the golf course, although,
and then next week in the 70s again.
Yeah, I gotta figure out what the move is. When it's 52, long sleeve shirt under a quarter zip, or do you go quarter zip and then the jacket over the top? I'm going to figure out what's the right move, because you don't want to inhibit the swing too much by wearing too much clothes.
I know, I think about that too sometimes.
What about the long sleeve shirt under the golf polo?
That won't be. I don't think that would be warm enough, though.
Hmm.
I would need one more layer than that. Otherwise, I would be in on that. So McDermott there on Geno Smith, he mentioned it, that they haven't played. He hasn't played Geno yet. He's only played the Seahawks one time, right? Since Sean McDermott got here. They have one matchup in the COVID year, I think. And that's, I think, their only meeting.
That is correct. And it's the only time that, well, Russ came here last year with the Broncos.
Right.
So there was this whole thing where Russell Wilson would never play in front of Bills fans.
Right.
Because COVID was the only time that they came here to Buffalo and there were no fans. Do you know, so I don't know how far back you remember Bills games against the Seahawks, but in the early 2000s, you know, they played, this is before they built their new stadium, they were in the Kingdom, right?
I can tell you the first game I remember, Bills-Seahawks.
Yep.
Because it didn't happen often, right? Like, the first one I remember, I think, would have been a Hasselbeck game where Jerry Rice was on the Seahawks.
Right.
So maybe, what is that, like 2003, 2004, maybe, around there at that
time?
Yeah,
well, is that the 04 game where Willis McGahee had the touchdown and the kind of the trick play?
Yes.
The Bills had
that.
A great end of the season, then they lost to the Steelers backups.
Yes,
right?
I remember this game.
So, that's 04. That's great. I'm glad. That's a good entry point here. So, I got to tell you a little scheduling quirk, right?
Okay.
So, the rule is, and the way the rotation works, let's throw out the additional game they just added 2 years ago, the 18th game, okay?
Yeah.
The rule is, the way it works, AFC teams play NFC teams every 4 years.
Yeah.
And you rotate home and away.
Mm-hmm.
So
every 8 years you should play
every,
in Seattle.
At your place.
And every 8 years they should come here.
That's right. So in 04, the Bills went there.
Yeah.
In 08, the Steelers came to Buffalo.
Seahawks, you mean? Yeah.
Seahawks, sorry. Seahawks came to Buffalo in 08. I think the Bills beat them pretty badly.
Before 7 a.m.
I think the Bills beat them pretty badly. It's early in the season, if I remember.
I've got it open. 34-10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next game was 2012, and it was supposed to be in Seattle.
Oh, that game was, wait.
But it went to Toronto.
Right.
Do you know why?
Was it just because they wanted?
No. What happened was, in 2009, the NFL made a weird, they changed the formula very slightly.
Okay.
And they started pairing the West Coast teams with, it was the Rams and the Seahawks, I think. There's Arizona in there. And for whatever reason, they said, you can't go to these two teams in the same year. It's got to be these two to limit travel. And that screwed up. So it made Seattle then go into a different boat with the Bills. So Seattle suddenly got flipped. Whereas now it was supposed to be an away game in 12, but became a home game in 12 to account for how the league flipped the two teams that you played in the same sequence.
Is that still the case, this travel thing?
So Yeah, so so Seattle then came to Buffalo, which became the Toronto game.
Right.
Yeah. And then the Bills went there on Monday Night Football in 16.
Yes, which is the...
And then they come back here in 20, yeah. And the Bills go over there in 24. So all that happened was, really, the way it was originally set up, this would be normally a go-to-Seattle year. But it flipped in 2009 because the NFL said, we have to make sure that you're not going to these two different cities in the same year.
Yeah. I'm glad you explained this because I was looking at this earlier in the week and didn't know why... How come in the last 20 years, because you got to go back to 2004, when the Bills were in Seattle then, how come in the last 20 years the Bills have only been in Seattle one time? This is only their second game in Seattle in 20 years. And that would explain it why. So that's why Geno Smith hasn't played against them either, because, you know, he just got there a couple years ago. So the only Bills-Seahawks game then that I... have since that Jerry Rice won, if I could call it that, in 2004, where the Bills won 38-9, is the Tyrod Monday night game, where he played great and they lost like right at the end, like on the goal line. They had a play to win it, and I don't remember what the play was, but it was incomplete, and then Walt Powell got blasted by Richard Sherman on the other side, and everyone was mad about that. So one meeting in Seattle in the last 20 years, going back to 2004, and Geno. So Geno Smith against the Bills, we do have experiences there. They're just a long time ago, like with the New York Jets.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't talk about him often. Is he not one of the crazier quarterback stories in the league of like the last couple of years? That he's even
unbelievable. Yeah,
he's in his third year as a starter. When I remember when he won the job, 2022. This is so Russell Wilson gets traded away. And the Seahawks get Drew Locke back in the trade. And I remember thinking, oh, well, why did they want Drew Locke back in the trade, who had only played like his rookie year? They want a young quarterback that could develop and start to turn the page. And when Geno Smith won that job, I almost felt like I didn't believe it. Like, you're starting Geno Smith? Really? Like, okay, well, this is a placeholder, right? He's going to play a couple games, and then you're going to get Drew Locke in there. And since the day he won that job, he has not given it up. He has stayed in there. He's been good the whole time, too. Like, he's not been incredible, but he's been good for... This is his third season. I would even say this year he's been pretty good. You mentioned he's led the league in passing. I know he's got same amount of touchdowns as picks. He's at 6 touchdowns, 6 picks, but you talked about how their line is so bad, and he's kind of the thing that's keeping that offense afloat, mm-hmm. I feel like, a lot of times.
Do you remember when he came out of the draft?
Yes.
I liked him better than everybody in 2013.
He was your guy?
He was the guy. I didn't love him, but I liked him better. The Bills took EJ that year.
Yeah.
Same year.
Yeah.
Right? I remember that year. And he was the guy I preferred in the draft.
Because he had huge college production at West Virginia.
Yeah, and that was kind of... That was right when the NFL was starting to really move to that type of offense, right?
Right.
Which was just really spread it out, air raid kind of stuff. Not total air raid, but, you know, it was kind of right after that. If you remember, like, 2011, the new CBA kind of brought a lot of that more in. And then 2013, teams really started to do this. And you're like, wait a minute, that's the guy you want. A guy like that who can do all these different things. And he's great at throwing in space.
Yeah. Stephen Ruiz from The Ringer. He does his quarterback tier rankings before every season. In fact, I think he updates them throughout the season.
Mm-hmm.
But before the year, Ruiz is huge on Geno. Like, that he is... I think he ranked him 9th in the NFL coming into the season. Like, this guy can make all the throws. And he's athletic enough. He's not going to run for a ton of yardage. Like, what's he got in the season, rushing-wise? He's sitting on 146. He's actually rushing more this year than the last year. So, he'll run a little bit. But this guy understands defenses, and he's got the arm strength to take advantage. And at 34 years old, him just kind of showing up 2 years ago, playing this well did he win comeback player of the year for it? Like, it's pretty stunning. He did win comeback player of the year, that he's been able to do that. So Bills will see him for the first time since, he was with the Jets. And on that point about how he was kind of, you know, he played at West Virginia, how the league was starting to turn. It was not how the Jets were starting to turn. Maybe that was always the problem. I don't know. The Jets, he went to a team with the Jets that wasn't running a similar system. They were running a very pro-style, under center type of offense. And He is an example. He's one of the many examples of it does matter where you get drafted. It does matter how you get developed early on in your career and the environment that you're placed within. There are actually, this year, maybe as much as ever, you're seeing that on display. It matters if you're a quarterback with a good talent level. It matters where you are because you're seeing Geno Smith right now thriving in a new environment that's better for him. You've seen Baker Mayfield thrive this year,
yes,
in an environment that's been better for him. And you've seen Sam Darnold thrive in an environment, the best environment he's ever been in. Three guys that all failed as prospects, they're all doing pretty well this year.
And again, I said this to Schopen Bulldog last week. Maybe that's what's caused me to go, maybe I'm going too far with it. I really believe more than anything that circumstance situation matters with these guys more than we've ever believed, right? But I've always said, you know this, I've said this for a long time. If Josh Allen gets drafted by the Jets, he's not Josh Allen we know today.
Right.
Doesn't mean he busts out, but he's not the player he is today. And if Sam Darnold gets drafted by the Bills, I don't think he's Josh Allen, but I think he's okay.
He's probably
kind of what he's been doing now.
I was going to say, if he gets drafted by the Bills, he looks like how he looks right now with
probably
Minnesota.
Right. Because the Bills did it the right way, and they had a vision for Josh, and they brought him along, and he had the talent to go with it, of course, but you have to be able to put people in the right position. Look at you know, Baker Mayfield, like you said, all the different changes they had, and he never had stability. Right. He's finally figured it out. Yeah, he's still up and down a little bit. He wasn't very good last.
He was pretty bad on Monday night. But
I mean, like,
otherwise he's been good.
Yeah, I mean, he earned himself, you know, a starting job again.
What would he be on the Bills? We've never explored that. I don't know if I've ever thought about that.
That's a good question.
He'd probably be pretty good too. He probably would still be good if he was on Cleveland. Mayfield. 803-0550 is the phone number. Bob, if you stay on hold, we'll get to you right when we come back on the break. I want to get to Myles Garrett, get some Sabres chatter with Joe Yurden, who will join us at 8. So a lot to get to still on Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy's off today. Sal's in. This is WGR. Let TRS Heating and Air Conditioning intercept your heating bills. Enter now at WGR550.com for a chance to win $1,200 towards your home heating costs. Don't fumble this opportunity. Contest ends January 5th. TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence powering tomorrow, comforting today. Joe DiBiase, Sal Capaccio, Bob in Arkansas, first up on today's show. What's up, Bob?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How you doing? Joe, I hope you told Sal he's got a very important job. He's going to have one of those dad jokes ready to go without Jeremy there.
Right.
Very important.
We're going to need to get a dad joke in at some point here.
Okay, great. I wore a shirt the other day that said dad jokes because my son bought that for me a couple years ago.
This is the guy then, Bob. We got a guy for it.
All right.
There you go. You got a fill-in that should be able to fill those shoes, right?
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it. Hey, the reason I called, I was thinking, actually, after Sunday, you know, watching Ray Davis run, and this is just the eye test for me because I don't really pay attention to the advanced analytics, but, and he looks good. You know, he looks quick. He looks sharp, quick cuts, bouncing in the hole. He's strong on his feet. And, you know, Ty Johnson's pretty good as well. But I thought, you know, it really seemed to be almost an upgrade over James Cook. And maybe I'm wrong about that. They're two different style backs, but I really like watching Ray Davis run. I think he brings more to the table maybe for the Bills. James Cook might be better in space, but doesn't seem like they ever get him in that much space. So I kind of wanted to get, I'm glad Sal's on, Sal's thoughts, and your guys maybe some of the advanced stats on it and see what you think.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Let me ask it this way, Sal. Cook is their lead back. Will there be games where Davis is their lead back, even?
I think other than injury, no.
Okay.
I think you're overthinking a little bit, Bob, to be quite honest with you. When you say they don't get James Cook in space, I think that's not correct. James Cook has one of the highest average yards per carry in the NFL over the last 2 years. You know why? Because he's out in space a lot. He's not a between-the-tackles runner except when they're running inside zone and he has a little space to operate. I love Ray Davis, too, and what he brings. There's no doubt. And I thought last week I had said, even during the broadcast, I said, man, I'd love to see them get under center, just run downhill with Ray Davis. This was not a James Cook kind of game. That was not a James Cook kind of defense to go against. Neither were the Jets. But generally, James Cook, to me, is the better player to have on the field because he offers more, and you can do more with him. Although I do love Ray Davis, there's no doubt about it, I don't think that Ray Davis should supplant James Cook anytime soon as the lead back. And like I said, I mean, I think James Cook, for he can run in space, and they do get him space, and he's done it. What is he right now? And Ray Davis, by the way, is averaging a higher yards per carry this year right now than James Cook, but they're both very, very close.
I've got them at 4.2 each.
Yeah, they're both at 4.2, but yeah. Cook for the last few years has been up near 5.
Yeah. And real quick on the advanced stats, I've got them almost exactly the same there, too. Rushing yards over expected, they're both 0.1 per carry. Actually, you know what's interesting? It's much more limited. I think Ty Johnson's like one of the best in football on that.
Well, I was going to say, like, when you have less carries, like Ray Davis, it's easier to have those numbers with a couple big runs.
Right. Ty Johnson, right. He might be up there because he had one run there where he's like 30 yards over expected.
Here's what I would say, Bob, just real quick to let you go on this. There's nothing wrong with having two really good guys.
Right.
This is not I don't like Ray Davis. This is not at all. Man, you play the hot hand. You go with who's rolling. That's fine. It's okay to have two guys who are really good, and they should keep using them both.
Brian in Cincinnati, hold on there. We'll get you when we come back out of the break, and we'll get to Myles Garrett coming up in the next segment, too, as an idea. Brian calling from Ohio, so get to some Cleveland stuff. Coming up, Jody Biasi, Sal Capaccio. This is WGR.